There are theories political scientists use to help predict how leaders and groups act in any given situation. The prisoner's dilemma, for example, shows that most decision makers will almost always choose the path that appears to lead to the most gains, regardless of a better, though seemingly irrational choice. Another is the Stanford Marshmallow Experiment from psychology that addresses delayed gratification in patients. More patient leaders, or leaders who perhaps value cooperation more, will wait for bigger rewards. Plop any person into these decision-maker positions and the results will be the same. Give anyone the opportunity to pick a marshmallow and statistics show that only one-third will wait for better terms. But what about personalities and individual traits? What happens when someone with an inflated ego or little experience is in control? Or when an incredibly patient person is making world-changing decisions? Wouldn't that change the game? A group of political scientists at the University of California, San Diego thinks so, and gained the support of a leading academic journal to expand the conversation. Curated by Emily Hafner-Burton, Stefan Haggard, and David Victor of the School of Global Policy and Strategy, and David Lake of the Department of Political Science, the International Organization Foundation published a 277-page special issue dedicated to what the researchers are calling the Behavioral Revolution and International Relations. The 10 articles they developed for the issue explore what they identify as ways that diversity can potentially lead to unexpected outcomes. They talk about resolve and attitudes toward power, social preferences, how the public uses information, and the experience of elites as it all pertains to strategy making. In short, ambiguity, emotion, misperception, overconfidence, poor choice making, and quick thinking all make a difference. Emily Hafner-Burton explains.
You could literally take a person from the phone book and you could put them into the same situation, crank through our theories, and you should get the same results. Because our theories are all about institutions and states. And that's just wrong. Okay. That's just wrong in the real world.
So the prisoner's dilemma, the Stanford marshmallow experiment, and many other game theories all allow for a predictable outcome. But what is yet to be predicted are the pieces that lead to a decision in the first place. The special issue looks at traditional rationalism, pulls from economics, psychology, and cognitive science, and puts into perspective how things may actually be different. Hafner-Burton explains that it isn't just about attacking rationalism. There are many theories in international relations, like liberalism, feminist theory, constructivism, but she does point out that rationalism has some flaws.
It's not a challenge to rationalism so much as it's an article that puts scope conditions around rationalism. So it's to say, yes, there is such a thing as a person who can think rationally and strategically in the way that our core theories have thought. It's just not everyone. It's a certain type of person.
And this is an important point. It's the conditions where the theories don't hold, she said, that need to be rethought. Here's Emily.
So it's really more the notion that people systematically matter in these larger broad-scale decisions, but it's just the beginning of the journey in terms of figuring out how they matter. So we kind of view this as the very beginning of what could be a potentially quite fruitful future train of investigation into how decisions, and not just leaders, but how voters, how publics think about international relations in important ways that are not just about the nature of the economy or the nature of the political institutions that they're in.
Policymakers often look at and make decisions at the institutional level, she said. What happens within the G20 as a whole is far more important than what happens when someone like Donald Trump takes office, becoming an influencer in this institution.
It's important because we spend so much time in the field of international relations, which is the field that the four of us are in who edited this, thinking about big, large-scale processes like war and peace and environmental climate change and human rights violations, you name it. And we think about all these things at above, flying 30,000 feet above the sky. Yeah. So we're always talking about states and states' motivations. And if we ever dig into what's happening inside a state, it's to talk about what a legislature might be doing or what a president might be doing. But we never talk about people.
Trump may be a special case, but the researchers instead pull from two strikingly similar presidents handling a world problem very differently. They look at George Bush Sr.'s engagement in the Persian Gulf during his time as president and George Bush Jr.'s engagement several years later. The rationalists would have expected similar results, but it certainly was not the case. And for this example, the implications go far beyond just what is taught in the classroom. Business Insider statistics show the cost of the Iraq War under Bush Jr. was up to $12 billion per month by 2008. or $1.7 trillion in war expenses spent by the Department of Treasury through 2013. By this time, $60 billion had been paid for reconstruction. More staggering, though, are the personal numbers. 655,000 people died in Iraq since the invasion, including 134,000 civilians. There are currently 2.8 million people displaced, and 150 reporters were killed. Could these numbers have been different, smaller, or even zero, with someone like Bush Sr. in office? Here's a quote directly from the researcher's text. Bush Jr.'s administration officials believed that the Americans could be greeted as liberators and democracy would flourish of its own accord. Such motivated reasoning both precipitated war and contributed to the failure to plan adequately for rebuilding the Iraqi state in war's wake. The causes of the Iraq War and the disastrous consequences of its aftermath appear to lie in as much the realm of beliefs and decision-making as in standard theories. So what about Trump? Was Speaker of the House Paul Ryan right to defend some of the president's behavior by saying he was just new to this? Perhaps. The research ultimately published in the journal was workshopped at two 2-day conferences held at UC San Diego in early 2014 and aligned exactly with the Laboratory on International Law and Regulation. This is the research lab headed by Hafner Burton and David Victor at UC San Diego's School of Global Policy and Strategy. They formed the lab to stop thinking in silos on specific issues. So human rights, for example, or climate change or trade. What is learned from one might help in another. Hafner Burton, Victor, and Eilar are supporters of mentoring, and this project encapsulates all of those tenets. They frequently support PhD researchers from the departments of political science and economics. They frequently send students to large global conferences. And for this project, they helped sharpen and develop the ideas and research of junior faculty who often don't have the opportunity to be published in such a high-level journal. The junior scholars certainly gained from the collaborative mentorship, but Hafner Burton also said she, too, gained. She called it a true back and forth and lauded the positive cross-fertilization of people who think about the world in different ways. They could have chosen all senior scholars, but they didn't. The conference and this volume was very much a part of our team's mentorship goal, she said. It has been a very important component and we formed some really good bonds. But we went back to Emily to ask, is this collective work controversial? Is it really a revolution?
It's not just if you believe behavioral economics is important, it's whether you believe individual preferences are important. And I think that's a genuine debate that we need to have in the field of international relations. Does it matter who Donald Trump is, or are the institutions going to rein him in? Does it matter what the voters think, or ultimately will the institutions rein them in?
Learn more about UC San Diego at ucsd.edu.